Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's what we're going to do with Patty and her guest.
Hey, thanks, Paul. We have the incredible Deanna Middleton with us today. She is an amazing woman.
Dana.
Did I say Deanna? Dana, I'm sorry. We talked about that just before we got on the air. She's an author, expert in marketing, and currently a leadership coach. Her previous roles included head of business marketing at Twitter, CEO at the global performance marketing company Performix, senior vice president at Moxie Interactive, which I love that word, and at HP, where she spent 16 years in a number of different marketing roles, and I spent 15 years at Microsoft, so we do have quite a bit in common. Her first book was titled Marketing in the Participation Age, which was published in 2017. It's about marketing design to inspire inspiration. What I really love is her current book, which is called Grace Meets Grit, How to Bring Out the Remarkable, Courageous Leader Within, and it's designed to create actionable behaviors and change for women and men in the workplace. She serves as a director on the boards at Marin Software, Elite, SEM, and HealthWise. Her work has been featured in Forbes, Fortune Magazine, Fast Company, The Huffington Post, Adweek, and she's appeared on CNBC. She's actually joining us today via Skype because she lives in beautiful Jackson Hole, Wyoming, although she's in Kansas right now, but she enjoys fly fishing, cross-country skiing, and horseback riding, all things you should do in Wyoming. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Patty. It's a delight to be here.
We had a great conversation on the phone, and we had a few chuckles and laughs together about our sort of parallel careers in terms of working at a high-tech IT company for a number of years and being very male-dominated industry. So tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I always like to say that I grew up in HP during its glory days. I'm sure you could say...
I could say the same thing.
You could say the same thing. I actually look back on my HP experience and think it is really a pivotal time in my life that had a big impact, probably far more of an impact that I realized later than I fully appreciated while I was there.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly the training that was invested in me, the type of leaders that I had at the time, the amount of span of control and budget, you know, authority that I had growing up there. And certainly I think the transformational leadership that I experienced mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. culture was really set the foundation for my entire career.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel like I worked at Microsoft during the heyday as well. I joined in 98 with the launch of Windows 98, and actually we created Starter Button Envy because Windows... Which sounds kind of funny, but...
I remember those days. Though.
Yeah, yeah, and our commercials were the Rolling Stones, Start Me Up. I mean, we had just incredible time, and... You know, I talk to a lot of women's and girls' groups and, you know, moms with young daughters about, you know, they really need to consider, you know, their girls getting into science, technology, engineering, math, or STEM, or to go to work for a big global company like HP or Microsoft, because I've traveled the world multiple times. I've been probably to every continent like you, lived in Asia for 3 years for Microsoft. They transferred me to head up their customer partner team in Asia for 3 years. Just an incredible experience to have that and be around some of the smartest people in the world. So, yeah. And I'm sure you experienced some of the same thing. So,
I did. What I think what caused me, you know, I could have stayed there forever, and then certainly there was a certain amount of guilt in leaving. It's almost like, you know, divorcing yourself from a family member. But I was really seeing a pivotal change happening in marketing where I had spent my entire career really understanding the science around persuasion. And suddenly we were launching a beautiful campaign with Gwen Stefani, et cetera. This was 2007-ish time frame at HP. And the tagline was, what do you have to say? And for the first time in history, people could actually tell us what they had to say.
Yeah.
And again, this is before mobile, before social, this is early, but HP had no intention or interest in learning what people had to say. And that really was pivotal for me, because then suddenly I realized that suddenly marketing was around the science of participation, not persuasion. And that's what caused me to write my second book and kind of leave the company to do kind of an experiment and work with multiple brands around participation. So that's into the agency world.
And now the key is really, how do you create engagement and conversations?
Well, that is participation.
Yeah,
right?
Whether that's on LinkedIn or Twitter, but you're trying to put something out there to, you know, at the end of maybe you do a blog or something on LinkedIn, or you do something at the end of your social to say, you know, just put the comment thoughts with a question mark.
Exactly, because you want someone to respond.
Yeah, you want somebody to respond. That's what matters in today's environment.
Totally.
We had such a great conversation when we talked on the phone, and I'm very, very interested in the concept of the great grace meets grit, or when do you need to be grace and when do you need to be grit, and how do you recognize that self in yourself? So I'd really love to hear about the book and what you mean by grace and meets grit.
Sure. So, you know, I kept feeling as though we had a missing gender conversation. We talk a lot about equality, and certainly equality is important because we still have a pay equity problem. And until that gap gets filled, you know, equality is still a good conversation to have. But I saw so many misunderstandings at a lower level within organizations between men and women, and even women feeling somewhat inadequate, because I think now that I've done the research, I know that it's because they're being measured against the male or the grit style, because men are still largely in charge. We know that from all of the data. So I guess what tipped me over into writing the book is I was heading up Performix. I was the CEO of Performix at the time. I was in New York. I was walking down the aisle visiting with another male manager, and I inquired about another female CEO within the group. There weren't many. And I had learned that they had decided to part paths. And his words to me were, well, I don't think she's going to work out. And, you know, most of the good ideas come from her team anyway. And, you know, she doesn't really understand how to make decisions. And I couldn't believe it, because this was a really amazing woman who was good with her team, good with the clients, understood the digital space, somebody that we would want from a talent standpoint. And what I learned when I started to do the research, that decision making is in fact the most biased leadership behavior, and women have a very inclusive leadership's or decision making style. Men have a very autonomous leadership decision-making style in their leadership approach. And so, you know, here she was, a woman lost her job as a result of there being a misunderstanding about the male versus the female leadership style. I thought, we need to have a different conversation. And that sent me down the path of really doing the research and finding out that, you know, women and men have developed their leadership styles from a very different place. And so that's how Grace Meets Grit came about.
Yeah, it's interesting, because in some of my research that I found that when I was interviewing one of the women for my book, she was one of the first women to graduate from West Point. Her name is Deb, and she retired from the military after a very successful career, you know, managing massive amount of troops overseas in Afghanistan and Iraq, and, you know, various things she had been through, and retired after 30 years, because in the military, after 30 years, you're basically forced to retire. Now lives happily in Hawaii, but the comment she made, which has to do with decision making, or how women approach things, what she says, women see around the corners. And that, you know, a man is in a meeting and he wants to be decisive, and at the end of the meeting he wants to have a decision. So he will stand there in the meeting, have his agenda, have his outcomes in mind, and he will get to that decision in that meeting. And maybe that looks like he's very decisive. And he won't notice that half the team is not bought in. Half the team is completely disengaged, or even having side conversations where the woman would notice. She would see around the corners. She would see something that didn't feel right, and either she would stop in the meeting and say something to try and draw people in, or she would take the time to build consensus and maybe get to collaboration so people bought into the decision, where it may look like he made a quick, fast decision, but the implementation is going to be hell because nobody's bought in. The woman makes a longer decision, but does in a collaborative environment, but the implementation is easier because there's buy-in.
That's exactly right, Patty. And the reason for this is because our leadership behaviors are derived from our communication styles and our intent for communication. So as all of the research of Deborah Tannen, if you're a longtime Deborah Tannen fan, the purpose for women to communicate is all based on establishing and maintaining relationships. The purpose for man's communication is to establish and maintain status and drive immediate action. And those purposes translate into how we lead. And so you're absolutely right in your description that a woman is going to, because she's focused on the relationship, think about what those people are thinking and feeling at the time and do a more collaborative approach, whereas the man is thinking about that immediate action. What do I need to do immediately to drive an effect? And therefore, again, neither one is right or wrong. They're just a very different view of leadership. And so if we could fully embrace both, it would be obviously a better outcome for the whole organization.
And if we could balance, like you said, if we could balance both, and I love what you said, it's not an either or, it's not that one is bad and one is right and one is wrong, it's that we need both of these to really make great decisions. As you know from any research on teams, you know, a team that's really effective is going to have very diverse styles of thought, of leadership, of the way they communicate kind of thing, so that they come out with the best decisions.
Exactly.
I just love what you're saying. It's just so interesting to me, and I'm sure it's pretty interesting to our audience. I was at a women's event yesterday here in Orange County, California, run by my friend Sherelle Jackson, that's called Leadership in Hills. And the topic yesterday was He Said, She Said. So this is generally a women's group. There's usually a few men, but she had men on the panel talking about their perception. Or it was just fascinating, but she showed the funniest YouTube video called The Tale of Two Brains. Now, I've seen things similar before where you could go on YouTube and you can search for the difference between men and women's brains, and some comedian says something, but this guy was the funniest. The Tale of Two Brains, and about how we think, how we, you know, women looking for relationships, men looking for status or for other kinds of things.
Interesting.
You'll have to watch it. It is one of the best, one of the absolute best. So what are the benefits of the Grace leadership style?
So obviously, as we've talked about, the benefits are that it is very inclusive and relationship focused. So you're right in the sense that all of my research shows that women will forego a deadline in order to involve others in the process. And of course, this directly is opposed to what most men would do. Obviously, the deadline is most important. But the advantages are that you are bringing people along. You are getting a broader view of the situation. And in that process, you may be even thinking about not just the short-term outcome, but even potentially what impacts might happen for the longer term.
Right.
And, you know, obviously collaboration is really important in organizations today. Harvard Business Review did a research study recently that showed that only 3% of the employees in organizations actually are accountable to doing all of the organization collaboration. And most of those fall on the backs of women, unfortunately. But it's highly valued. Everyone understands it's required. And then on the flip side, obviously, for the grit approach, there are benefits to making quick decisions, and sometimes you need to. And, you know, that results-driven approach can also be beneficial.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love what you're saying. So can men have grace?
Yes, well, that's the other interesting. So Grace Meets Grit was a double entendre. We're obviously over-dramatizing, and we all have, you know, female and male leadership qualities within us. In fact, I do have more of a grit style of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But Grace Meets Grit also allows us to have a language around it. Instead of men do this and women do this, it's, you know, my team will say to me, Dana, did you forget your grace today? And I will say, yeah, I need to go home and get her. So, it allows us to have a dialogue around this that we're really missing today.
Yeah, it's funny. I probably have a similar style as well. I do tend to come across more grit than grace. But at least sometimes when I do run over somebody, I do go back and apologize or realize I did it later, or somebody points it out. And I remember a coworker named Gretchen when I worked at Microsoft. I love her dearly, and she's still a good friend on Facebook. But she sent me an email, and it had, you know, a question. Just, you know, she sent me this long email. We obviously have very different styles. Sent me this long email, had a question, and I responded back, yes. And she responded back, ouch.
Yes, I continually coach, and now as a coach, and I'm sure you do this as well, I encourage people not to ascertain emotion or assign emotion to emails or texts.
Yeah.
It's a very dangerous approach. But I also have the same problem. I'll you know, write this email, and then I'll step back and think, oh, I should probably start out with, hello, how are you today? Because I will forget those things in the urgency of just driving results myself.
So. I have to do the same thing all the time. I have to literally sit there and say, hi, how are you? How are things going?
Exactly.
And sometimes it's almost painful because I just want to say yes.
Yes, I know, me too.
So you talk about grace versus grit having multiple meanings. What do you mean by that?
Meaning, obviously, grace meeting grit might be that you're meeting a man for the first time and understanding why he behaves the way he does, and maybe even self-reflecting on some of your own, you know, style and approach that you didn't realize where it came from. But it also means that you do have both inside of yourself. And so the best leaders, whether they're men or women, dial up both and embrace both into their leadership style.
Yeah. That's great. So why is it so important to have this discussion today?
Well, I think the biggest reason to have this discussion is because we're still seeing women drop out very early in the leadership chain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they are still being held to the male style of leadership. And yet we don't really understand that. That's all somewhat hidden or misunderstood, and often it's in subtle terms. So when I first took my role of leadership at HP, I'm moving from being a very successful individual contributor, I couldn't figure out why I kept missing the mark and things weren't working out like mm-hmm. I thought they should. And I feel like there was a secret code amongst the boss and all of my peers who were all men suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was failing, and my boss also could see that I was missing the mark, and actually he was very supportive. He wanted to help me, but he didn't know how.
Right.
And so having this as a tool versus bias training, which is really sensitivity training, which is supposed to help me understand what it's like to be a man and him understand what it's like to be a woman, which, by the way, in a serious business situation will never be remembered.
Right.
This gives us something much more tangible for us to have the conversation and for us to truly understand and identify, you know, how we can change our behaviors and how we measure others that in through a different lens that we might not have considered before.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting because a man can be in a meeting and being seen as assertive, and yet a woman can be exhibiting the exact same behaviors in a meeting and be seen as aggressive, bitchy, and bossy.
Oh, yeah. I've been there. I'm sure you have as well.
And I've been called the B word a number of times or being overly aggressive or something. So it's interesting. You know, and one of the other reasons I think it's so important to have the discussion today, as we sort of talked about offline, was that, you know, there's still a huge pay gap. You know, women's pay has only gone up 1% in the last decade. You know, on average, as you know, women make 80 cents on a dollar to a man who makes 80 cents as compared to a man who makes a dollar. You know, African-American, I've seen 67, and Hispanic, I've seen as low as, you know, 63 and even lower. And that pay gap doesn't just impact the woman. That impacts her family, her purchasing power, the economy. It affects everything. And yet we've been working on this for at least my lifetime. You know, we had the burn the bra movement and the, you know, campaign to get the rights and all this stuff. And yet we're still not there. I mean, it's so important to have this conversation of how do we help women embrace their grace, embrace their grit, and help them be successful at any level in leadership.
It's so true. And as I saw my daughter really enter the workforce, she had a very negative experience really with her first interview. And she told me, she said, Mom, I thought this was all fixed.
And me too.
Very discouraged, right? And so, yes, I think it's really important to at least set the expectation with these young women entering the workplace to let them know that, in fact, it hasn't been all fixed. But here's what you can do. You know, here are some tools to help you succeed. Let's not throw in the towel and or let's not pretend that it's all fixed. But let's, you know, approach this in a realistic manner. so that we can move forward, hopefully.
Yeah, because like you said, we thought we fixed this. We did all this sexual harassment and diversity training, and I remember going to them when I worked at, you know, before Microsoft, when I worked at the bank. I went to all this diversity training, and we talked about our feelings, and we talked about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And now there's this whole new unconscious bias stuff going on, and it hasn't been fixed.
No, it hasn't even been fixed, and it's, you know, perhaps in some ways moving in the wrong direction, which is really discouraging.
Yep, that's what I'm seeing, too. Actually, in some cases, it possibly made the situation worse. So, you know, one of the things we talked about offline as well was we talked about this whole idea, and I was talking to my agent publisher person the other day about my next book, which I'm just messing around with what the title is going to be. The concept's going to be the same, but it's, you know, how do we get to women's leadership, empowerment, and equality is kind of the premise of it. So I kind of came up with this new title, which is The Death of the Good Old Boys Clubs and the Rise of the Bro Culture.
Yeah.
And we sort of talked about some of this with your daughter, also your experience at one particular place that you worked. But, you know, it just seems like sometimes I think younger women might be in denial. This stuff still exists, or even we're in denial, but you know, let's talk, there's everything going on with Uber and the bro culture, and let's talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah. Yes, it's quite disturbing that all of this is occurring, and I think in Silicon Valley in particular, you know, there does seem to, at least the good news is I think it's being unearthed, and people are starting to have the conversation, which is a good one. Certainly, I experienced this at Twitter. I've never been involved in so much of a bro culture as I experienced there. And so, you know, I actually really hadn't even thought about what a bro culture is. And if you want a humorist, you should go online and actually look for a search engine that is, you can come up with a search engine that provides you with a bro translator. I think it's called Bro Translator, actually. And you can type in, "Hi, how are you today?" And it says, "Yo, sup, man."
is it a whole new language?
I was living in that translator because everyone called everyone by their last names. And there were so many situations where I thought, wow, I wouldn't have approached solving that problem in this manner. You know, I would have done it very differently. And why am I so different? And what makes this culture so different? But it is a younger, it's not the old boys network. It is something completely different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I found that to be a very uncomfortable place, especially as an older woman. I actually think that made it worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just tell you, I was not really anyone's grandmother or mother. I wasn't the young, attractive person. I really didn't fit in any category there. And it was really kind of one of those experiences that made me think a lot about, you know, my position there and my level of influence. It really was an interesting experience.
Yeah, and so, and I'll have to look up on, when I get home, I'll have to, or get back to my office, look up kind of more on the bro culture, because how would you describe it? I mean, I know you said that there's a bro translator that you need to, you know, translate maybe what they're saying, but how else would you describe the bro culture?
Very status conscious and status driven and immediate action focused, and so, and certain, you know, when you're going to solve a problem, instead of just putting it on the table and really saying, okay, here's the problem, we're going to focus today, we're all going to, you know, step in and play equal part. Everything was couched in status consciousness.
Right.
And shrouded in that. I think that's probably the overwhelming feeling that occurred. You know, the other thing I would do is, you know, volunteer to help coach some of the engineering women, because 3% of the population of engineering was women. And what I really hadn't internalized until I started helping them and volunteer with them is that most of them were also Asian. And so they had cultural, on top of the gender, we also had cultural implications, and they would get feedback like, be more visible. And so think about that.
For an Asian woman, that's not something that's almost in your DNA.
Right. And so, you know, taking the time to sit down with them and saying, okay, how am I going to take this feedback and make it actionable in a way that they can even comprehend? That was a big leap.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to continue this conversation. We do need to take a quick commercial break, but I want to make sure a couple of times we let people know how to get in touch with you, how to spell your name, what your book is, and if you have a website or something, you know, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you after the conversation. So let's start off with your name and how we can get in touch with you.
Sure. It is Dana, but it's D-A-I-N-A, which is unusual. Last name is Middleton, just like Kate, M-I-D-D-L-E-T-O-N. And my website is easy. It's dana@danamiddleton.com.
Great. And your book is Grace Meets Grit, How to Bring Out the Remarkable Courageous Leader Within. And I'm guessing it's on Amazon, right?
It is.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to continue this amazing, great conversation with Dana. Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Patty and her guest.
So this is Patty Grimm. I'm here with Dana Middleton, an amazing woman and author and coach in a variety of different areas. So we were talking a bit about this whole bro culture thing, and Paul and I offline, Paul's my station manager, we were talking about, you know, what's this whole bro culture all about? And, you know, comment was it's all about bumping, like fist bumping and high-fiving and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember at Microsoft, I was consulting to them because I left Microsoft 4 years ago, but I still do consulting for them. And I was consulting, working with one of the really high senior leaders. And at the end of the conversation, when we were talking about coming, we were doing a presentation for a big worldwide conference, and he does a fist bump. and I kind of put my hand up and did that, which is, I played sports, I'm on the high five and all thing, but it was just, it's such an unusual thing, and I was kind of shocked for a second that a fist bump, you know, mm-hmm. Not great job, not, you know, hey, we really nailed that thing, it was a fist bump, and so Paul said it was all about bumping, all about bumping, it's competing and bumping, and, you know, sometimes women just aren't comfortable with that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think the younger generation has had some more comfort because of their growing up in sports. I think of my daughter, who really was an athlete all the way through college.
Right.
And I watch her raising her kids, and it is very much a cheering it on, coaching type of leadership, you know, as they raise their children. And so I think women are more comfortable, but sometimes it just seems odd in the context of the relationship. So
at work. Yeah. I grew up in sports too. My kids were all in sports. I mean, my husband was a high school football coach. I mean, we lived football. So in your book, you talk about transformational leadership. Explain what that is and why it's important to the conversation we're having around leadership and women in leadership.
Sure. So, you know, I didn't know much about transformational leadership. I didn't know much about the different leadership styles until I started to do research and kind of stumbled along an old concept, really, which has been around since the 1970s. And the notion of transformational leadership was coined by James Burns, who was a presidential biographer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he really said there are three different styles of leadership. There is the standard transactional approach, which we're all familiar with. It's very much arisen from the industrial age, which is if you do X, I'll give you Y, and that's about the end of it. There is laissez-faire leadership, which I'm sure you and I and all of us have had laissez-faire leaders, which means they're completely uninvolved until there becomes a crisis, and then suddenly they're all over you.
Right.
And then there's the transformational leader, which is really about what I would call, in a nutshell, a charismatic leader who cares about the individuals, who's invested in making sure the followers have personal growth in addition to the business growth, and in that process lifts all boats, if so to speak, toward the benefit of the organization. And I really feel that because of the relationship approach, you know, women are more transformational. And in fact, there's been over 40 studies now that show that women are natural transformational leaders because of their relationship approach. And this is becoming really important today, this old concept, because millennials really expect to work for transformational leaders. And, you know, that's bringing this old concept very relevant. So more and more organizations are talking about it and thinking about it in ways they perhaps haven't in the past.
Yeah, in fact, I do a lot of research as well. I consider myself sort of a research geek, and my biggest problem with my next book is that I have so much information and so much data, it may end up being the great American novel in 1,000 pages. So I might need to break it up into a couple of books. But it's just the research that shows that millennials actually are looking for some of the same things women are looking for in the workplace. They're looking for a place they can make a difference, opportunity for growth, where they get consistent feedback. So one of the things I know is that you talk with companies a lot that are struggling to recruit and retain millennials. What are you learning, and what can companies be doing to attract these millennials? And I've talked to actually a couple of young women. One of them I've been mentoring for a while, that she got out of the corporate life because she couldn't stand the bro culture and just decided she'd start her own company.
Yeah. Well, that's happening often. That's my daughter, too. She's a very similar place. She just is tired of it. And it's too bad, because I think we're losing the young women early, even earlier perhaps than in the past. And even more than the millennials. Now, the oldest millennials are now in their 30s. And so we're even dealing with Gen Z. So as I'm working with these companies, I think really helping them understand the work styles of multiple generations, because, you know, we do have them all in the workplace, and they have different motivations. If I look at Gen X, which I'm actually a Gen X, I really don't value, and I might overlook the value of coaching individuals, which as you have already identified, millennials expect to be coached pretty much every single day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, thinking about those things, what are those motivators, and what can we do to really foster, just like style differences or gender differences or age differences or race differences, how can we overlay this generational working together difference so that we can help people understand what they're bringing to the workplace and their expectations is what companies really need to have a healthy work environment.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had conversation as well with some even friends that are trying to manage Gen Xers, the millennials, and they're just, you know, they're pulling their hair out and saying, you know, help me with this person. And I'm like, my first comment to them is just step back a minute and recognize that when we came into the workplace, whether you're a baby boomer or a Gen Xer, when we came into the workplace, the previous generations and our parents said the same thing about us, right?
We're
the first ones that maybe had college degrees consistently. We wanted to be president of the company in 5 or 10 years. We wanted feedback. And now it's just the millennials have grown up in that so much, that constant feedback, that they need something. They need a tweet or an Instagram, or they need something almost every day that says, hey, you did a great job today. And we need to be able to deliver that, because we want to attract these young people with their talents and their experiences and their fresh new ideas. And I'm sure you've had a lot of conversations with friends or people you're coaching as well. It's like, can't we all just get along?
Well, and even think about different ways of working. So mm-hmm. I think we really are moving away from this notion of balance, and I prefer to call it more of a centered approach to work where, mm-hmm. you know, if you think of the millennials and then even more the Gen Zs, you know, work is wherever you are, whenever you do it. And that is very, because technology is so integrated into how they think, it's really not about balance. It's about integration and about being centered and choosing when you work and when you don't. And so companies are also thinking about, you know, how do I allow people to take a leave of absence, even if it's not for kids or for parents? It might be because I want to go travel Europe and then come back into the workplace, because having that flexibility is certainly going to be a benefit for them to be able to attract and retain and capture that talent that they're losing out on otherwise.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I just did a presentation last Friday to a group of nonprofits, about 160, 170 people, and it was all about the generation gap. And so one of the things I talked about is some of the differences have to do with how we were raised, right? So most people, like Gen Xers and baby boomers, eventually we got raised as using computers to get information and, you know, going into a job every day, 8 to 5 or whatever the hours were, going into work, getting your work done, and then going home. Well, millennials, everything they do is on their phone. Right. Yep. If they're going to search the web for a restaurant or something, anything, or information for a project, they're going to use their phones. And we would probably still revert back to our computers, although I use my phone a lot more. You know, when we grew up, you know, there wasn't the threat in the world there is today. So we were pretty free. And if I came home before dark, my mom thought I was sick or I got in trouble or something, where now you can't let your children, you know, 3 feet from you where you can touch them for fear of somebody, you know, kidnapping or taking them away or something happening to them. And, you know, how they access information, the games we played, right? We played outside or, you know, maybe early computer games were something, but now there's completely different. So some of it's how we were raised. It's how we do things. So companies need to figure out how can you work in this multi-generational workforce where you hold people maybe accountable for the results of what they do, not the number of hours in the office or, you know, if they work from 8 to 5, or they might, a lot of people at Microsoft and HP, especially the programmers, they work from, you know, 2 a.m. to 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, actually, and utilization has always been a poor measure of true productivity anyway. We all know that in terms of number of hours worked. Because you could work a certain number of hours that would be ridiculous and not actually produce anything. And so I think companies are thinking about more performance-based measures of really evaluating their workforce and their bandwidth and the resources that they need. So all of that, I think, is really positive. It's just taking a lot longer than I think we had imagined to get there.
Yeah, it goes back to, I thought we fixed this stuff, right?
So true.
And you look around and go, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, Harvard just recently did a study called Make Common Cause Common, where they interviewed a group of millennial women and asked them, you know, describe the workplace and have you ever felt you've been sexually harassed or in an uncomfortable position or somebody made a joke or maybe they did a fist bump or they wanted to do a chest bump, which really is not very appropriate for most women.
Yeah.
And every one of the women, the young millennial women interviewed, all said yes. They showed that same video. They showed the video of the girls responding, and the millennial boys were shocked. That they didn't, they thought, oh, well, we were just kidding. This is how we play. This is how we compete. Like, it's all about bumping. So how do we help millennial women, you know, work in this environment, create a different environment, or how can companies create a different environment where everybody's style is recognized and they can perform at their best?
Yeah. You know, there are pros and cons, and I think to a certain extent, if I look at the younger generations, their definition of gender and gender differences is so less than what we're used to. In some ways, that's good. They have a much broader definition, and so they're willing to flow, you know, through grace and grit much more fluidly than we did. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I think the downside of that is not understanding where the barriers are and potentially, you know, I think just being able to have these honest conversations, and that certainly was the goal of Grace Meets Grit, is let's start talking about these things, because if we know they're there, for me, I knew knew that there was a problem, you know, when I moved into that first level of leadership, but I kept it to myself and I thought it was me that was the problem. And so if we can actually have a healthy dialogue earlier, because it wasn't until years later that I realized, gosh, everyone else went through the same issue and we didn't know what it was and didn't have a way to talk about it. And I think, you know, really encouraging them that there are still these uneasiness, and just like I do with leadership coaching, which is let's talk about our styles, the strengths, the weaknesses, where we might have points that don't necessarily work well together, where we will work well together. Across all of these facets, I think we'll be in a much better place in the workplace.
Yeah, because I know that you believe it's really important, like you said, to have that blend of styles and that transformational leadership. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, maybe a little bit more specific? What do you mean by blend of styles and transformational leadership?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, all of the research shows that the more diverse leadership team that you have, the diversity of styles, age, gender, all of the filters that you would apply to having a diverse team, they perform better.
Yeah.
So, but they're not easy. So I'm working with a company that they actually used a single profile to recruit, wanting only that profile.
Well, that's not going to work.
No. And so think about, you know, yes, it makes it much easier. They all kind of speak the same language. They think the same way, but you're missing the blind spots. Think about things you won't think of.
Yeah.
So helping people, give them the tools to help them be successful at working with these diverse teams, I think is going to be really critical. And we're a global organization. You know, most organizations are global. We're a global world today.
Yeah.
And really having that view will benefit everyone if we can really go back to that, championing that diversity.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. I just did a team session for Cal State Fullerton on Tuesday, and we did the simple style instrument where we had people, and I used four birds. I used an owl, an eagle, a dove, and a peacock, and had people pick the one that was most like them. And then we talked about what's the strength of your style. What does your style bring to the team? We had people in birds of a feather exercise where they talked about, you know, I'm an eagle, I'm a peacock, I'm a dove, or I'm an owl, and talk about what's the strength of your style, what does your style bring to your team, and then what is your style, what's the downside of your style under stress? Because any strength to an extreme becomes a weakness. So you can go from being too much of an eagle and being assertive to being aggressive, and you can go from too much of being an owl, of being, you know, detail-oriented and analytical, and being in analysis paralysis. So we talked about that, and then I did a walk a mile in their shoes opposite exercise where they had to pick the style that's least like them. And what do they need to do to work with the style more effectively? What does the style bring to the team? And we had laughs, and it was funny. And I did the same thing with the gender with the nonprofit group. I had the baby boomers in one group, the millennials in one, and the Gen Xers in the other. And each one talk about their style. How would they describe their style? What does their style bring to an organization? And then what do they need to do to communicate differently with those other two groups? Both sessions were different in different circumstances, but both went very well. And people walked out with a lot of ahas of it's about appreciating the differences, recognizing those, and the value they bring to the organization or to the team.
Exactly. And that was my exact intent with Grace Meets Grit. Let's really look at the reason women have a different leadership style than men and what we're missing out by not really embracing both and leveraging both in leadership today.
Yeah, so I think the key lesson in what you just said is understanding each one, embracing each one, and recognizing what they bring to the team.
Exactly.
Awesome. So I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you, but I also want you to answer kind of the final question specifically for women. So given all of your experience and what you've done and your books, etc., and your coaching, what words of advice do you have for women who really want to go kick some glass and break through this gender gap to achieve, you know, pay equality, but also just overall equality? What words of advice would you have?
My words of advice would be embrace your internal power. I know as women, we often have, and I certainly have throughout my career, had an ambiguous relationship with power and maybe some discomfort with saying I'm powerful, or women often think of power being external, and power is about empowering others. and being power from within. And that's something we naturally do, and we should be proud of it and use it, embrace it, and leverage it in a very positive way. That would be my advice.
I love that. It's about embracing your power, but also empowering others to move forward. That's absolutely, absolutely perfect. So you've been an awesome guest. I really, really appreciate your time. I'd love to know one more time so our audience knows how to get in touch with you. And again, please spell your name because it is a little bit different, like mine, but how we can get in touch with you.
Sure. Thanks so much. It's Dana, D-A-I-N-A, and Middleton, just like Kate, M-I-D-D-L-E-T-O-N. And the website is dana@danamiddleton.com.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a great day. And so my name is Patty Grimm, I like Grimm's Fairy Tales or the Grimm's TV show, so like Kate Middleton. Yeah. So it's you can get in touch with me at pattygrimm@live.com, and it's PATTIEGRIMM@LIVE.com. You can also check out my website, which will be up soon, at advantage-training.com, or you can check out my or call me on my cell phone, 425-289-6619. You've been a great guest. This has been a wonderful show. A couple things for folks. If you want to be a sponsor on our show, I am looking for sponsors because we need to keep this on the air, and just like PBS, we need sponsors to do that. So please contact me if you want to be a sponsor. Please contact me if you want me to do a speech, a webinar, a workshop for your women or your overall organization. And I hope everybody has a fantastic day. Please be sure to check out my book on Amazon. It's on Amazon. It's called Quiet Women Never Change History. Be strong, stand up, stand out, with a subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass. And I hope all of our audience out there really kicks some glass today and becomes a grace and grit leader. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grimm.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimm@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.